We're starting at the top of Ayin Chet Amud Aleph, the 8th Perek. Just as quick background to the 8th Perek, we've had before, the Gemara mentions different types of nechassim, different types of possession that a woman brings into a marriage, right, part of the dowry. One is nechassim maluk, right, and one is nechassim tzona barzel. Right, so what's the difference between nechassim maluk and nechassim tzona barzel? Right, nechassim maluk, she brings physical property into the marriage, and that property is returned at the end, either in the termination of the marriage, meaning that either if there's a divorce or her husband passes away, she'll get that land back. In the interim, the husband's entitled to the peirot, to the production of that field, of that karka that's brought in. That's nechsei maluk. Right, nechsei tzona barzel works differently. Here, nechsei tzona barzel, they assess the property at the time of the dowry, and then the husband's responsible for that amount of money. He can do whatever he wants with the land, but he's on the hook for the value of the land that's brought in. Obviously, one of the major differences between them is what happens if the land value goes up or goes down or changes. Right? By nechsei maluk, the change of property value stays with the woman because she never really gave up ownership of the property, but she is allowing him to get the production levels, but she gets back. So at the end of the period, that land will come back to her, unless she predeceases her husband. But the land will come back to her, she'll get that higher value or lower value, be all hers. And so in Barzil, they've assessed the value of the land, and therefore there's a fixed value at the end of the marriage. Either, again, if she's almana or Kirushin, that value will be determined by what? By the original assessment value. So it doesn't matter if it goes up, goes down, it's not relevant anymore. So now, the question is, what happens to a woman who transacts in these properties? And so we're going to discuss that today. The Mishnah really discusses about what's a woman's right to transact in property that fell to her, that it's eventually going to end up inside the marriage. I mean, does she still have rights to transact in the principal property, or to own the property, when she owns it prior to coming into the marriage? What are her rights in that property, since eventually the husband will have certain rights in that? What are the husband's rights in the nechsei? We're really going to talk about nechsei maluk today. What are the husband's rights in nechsei maluk? He gets the production of the property, and if his wife predeceases him, he inherits the property. So obvious issue will come up is what happens if, while they're married, the woman sells the property, right? Because now he's still entitled to the production of the property when she sold it to him, although she owns the core property. The only time the two issues will come up is the production levels, and number two is at the end, if she predeceases her husband, he actually owns the property. So could she sell away that right, or can he take that right back? That's what the Mishnah is discussing. So here we go.
Some buyers have also here.
What? And if it's on Barzil, he gets the property up front even, because it's an assessed value that we're talking about, not the actual physical property that he has to return, right? All right. So she has some property before she even had a recent recognition, before she got engaged. Right, that she can transact in this property, right? There's no question that she can transact in it. Now, Noflula Mishinit Arso. So again, this property, this first case is where she had the property before she had Irusin. Then she was Nit Arso. Everybody agrees that she can transact the property. Noflula Mishinit Arso. If she got property, meaning somehow she inherited her father or someone else, right, while she was already engaged, but prior to Nisuin. Beshami Omrim Timkor. She has the right to sell it, right? She can do whatever. She can transact with it. Veitila Omrim Lo Timkor. That she cannot transact in this property. Elu ve'elu modim, they both agree, she machra v'notna, if she did transact in the property, kayam, that the transaction holds, right, and we don't go and undo the transaction. So far we've dealt with, we dealt with the property that fell to her before she had Erusin, then she was involved in Erusin, transacts on the property, that is, she's free to transact. That property belonged to her free and clear beforehand. The Arusin does not change it. But if she had Arusin, then the property fell to her while she was already in Arus, right? Then, Arusah, when she was already in Arusah, then Beis Hillel says she shouldn't transact. Beis Shammai says she can transact. But they both agree that if what? If they did transact, that the transaction holds.
Right?
Yeah. It doesn't mention explicitly, but it's pretty clear from the Mishnah, because otherwise, what's the question here, right? Amar Rav Yehuda.
But some guys, by definition, is what's written in the Ksuba.
Right. Amar Rav Yehuda. Amar Chachamim lifnei Rabbi Gamliel. Hov izochav v'isha lo yizkeh b'nechasim. I mean, if already he has some sort of rights in the woman, shouldn't he have rights to her property? We're going to have to see in the Gemara what that means. Amalehem, ala chadoshim, on the new ones, anuboshim, I mean that stuff that fell to already after Nisuin, we're upset about elosh atem megagalim, alinu ati yishanim, you also want to bring on the old ones, stuff that she had prior to being married? All right, again, we'll get into this in the Gemara. Nafu la mishanisit. But as the property came into her possession when she was already fully married. Right, then everybody agrees then what that she can go, the husband has a right to take him away from the buyers. I mean, she was already fully married, she gets property, her husband has clear rights to the payroll, and she may not transact in this property because she's already married, and therefore, what? Therefore, he can go and annul the transaction.
When?
Annul the transaction or take the payroll, or...
All right,
how many annuls and transactions does right. It transfer the value back?
All right, so that's... Well, he has to give the money back, right? He can't just take the property. Right, a question of...
When?
When can you take it back, right? That Mark discusses about... But whether he can take the payrolls, he can force... It seems like he can force the land back now. Okay, for sure, because once he forces the land back, because he has to get his payrolls. The only way he can get the production off the field is actually have possession of the field. So he can definitely force the transaction back. The only question will be, at the end, when his wife dies, okay, what is the story? Then does he get to keep the land, right? Is that what we're saying, motzi miyad l'kuchos, or does the land then revert back to the buyer? Right, you could have asked, because then it might be that he has rights now to take out the payroll, but in the long run, he doesn't have the rights to the land.
If the buyer gets the land back, then the actual reimbursing the value may not be necessary when he's taking it.
Right, because he might have only bought it, which is true. The Lukuchos might have only bought it for post right her death or something like that. Meaning that they're not they know when they're buying it that they don't really own it now. So that's not, we'll get to
future.
Right the future value. We'll get to all these good cases. All right, Adshelo Nisait, Venisait. If she got the property before her final Nisuin, right, Venisait, and then she had Nisuin, Rabbi Gilel Omer, Imach Ravenot No Kayom. Right, if she transacts in it, it's fine, then it's a good transaction. Rabbi Chanina ben Akavi, Rabbi Gamil, Hovazach B'Yishal, he's given a chasim. So the same line that we had above, but if he's marrying her and he has Nisuin and he's Zoch in the Isha, why shouldn't he get her property as well? We already have difficulty on what the property that fell to her when she was already in the Nisua, that we say that you annul the transaction. And you want to also say property that fell to her or that she had in her possession prior to her Nisuin? Rabbi Shimon differentiates between different types of possessions. Chasman Yiduim Labal, things that the husband knows about. Lotim Kor, she may not sell. Machra, but not na, but. If she does them, then the transactions are null. She ain't on you doing the bow. If the husband does not know madam, lo tim kor, she should not transact with them. Machma not no kayim. But if she does transact with them, the kayim, again, the Gemara discusses what that means. What the husband knows, what the husband knows. So now the Gemara wants to know, maishna resha de lo pligi. Maishna seifa de pligi. So the first resha and seifa here, right, are talking about the first two cases in our Mishnah. First two cases in our Mishnah were what? One, when she had property that she got in her possession prior to her Erusin. Then she was a Rusa. And then everybody agrees. Beisel Mejami all agree what? She can transact in that property, no problem. But if she was already in a Rusa, and then property fell to her, then you have a machlokus between Beisel and Mejami, whether she should transact or not transact. Mara wants to, what's the difference? At this point, she is an Arusa, right? So why should it matter when the property came into her possession? Why did it come in before her getting married or after getting married? Why should that matter? I mean, married here, I mean Arusa, not Nisuin. All right, so Gemara says, if it's a plague, Amrei debei Rabbi Yanai, Reisha b'schuta naflu, Seifa b'schuto naflu. That in the first case, where the property fell to her prior to Arusin, that was in her own possession. She was right in control of her properties or anything she owned at that point in time. So that's b'schuta naflu. Seifa, but the second half, right, in the Mishnah where it's already she's an Arusa, then she already belongs to the husband, right? She already belongs to the husband at that point, then it falls to his chus. So the Gemara says, im b'schuto naflu, kimach v'nata ma'kayam. If you're making it such a black and white difference between what? Erusin is the cutoff. Before Erusin, she owns her own property, that's why she can transact in it. After Erusin, it belongs to the husband, therefore she cannot transact in it. Then why does everybody agree that what if she did transact, that the transaction sticks? It should be.
It's not nechsei malug. If it's going, if it's actually truly going into the husband's property, then it's not nechsei malug. It's you mean the payrot.
Right. I mean her and any ownership she has are technically going into the husband's possession. Right? I mean that he has rights in this property, not only for nechsei, not only for payrot, but if she predeceases him, he's going to own the land. Right. So he has some sort of future option, maybe that he might own the land too. So it's more than just payros, because if it's just payros, right, you can deal with the payros until she dies. The point is that here is if she predeceases him, he will actually get this property. He has real ownership in this property. All right, so now, again, if Erusin is the cutoff, but yes, you're right, it's not.
There's no practical difference at the end of the day between the at that point in time, what right. she brought in and what she's receiving. At the end of the day, he's got exactly the same rights to us.
Until she dies.
Until she dies.
Right, because then he might lose them. If she's really sold it and the sale works, right, then, well, one is, can she sell it and then he loses out on his payros? I mean, how much ownership does she have over the land and how much ownership does he have over the land? Like his right to the payros, how strong is that enough to prevent her from selling it? And then him losing out on the payros, number one. Number two is, even if he has the right to keep the payros, does she have the right to sell it so that in the future he won't get the property? Right, so that's, the question is, how much ownership does she have over this land? All right, so now again, we said, what? The Gemara wants to know, Erusin's the cutoff now. This is what the Gemara is suggesting. Now, Erusin's the cutoff. Prior to Erusin, what? All ownership is hers. After Erusin, all ownership is his. So if that's the case, if that's such a clear defining line, right, then we should have it. When property falls to her after Erusin, why is it that we say, what? Even though Beis Hillel and Beis Shammai argue about whether she can transact, if she does transact, they both agree that the transaction stays. It sticks. Right? It's not annulled. So why is that? If it's so clear that it's his zechus, then well, it's zechuto, it fell, then why is it that it sticks? So Gemara says, Ella reisha vade b'zechuta naflu. It's clear before Erusin, if they fall, the property comes into her possession, that's her property, she can do what she wants with it. Seifa. But in the second case, which means what? After Erusin, the property falls to her, imar b'zechuta. Right? So we don't know. It could be her schus, could be his schus. What does it mean we don't know? So look at this Rashi. Rashi is interesting. Rashi, Emer b'schuto. If you can look at this Rashi, it's across from the Mari Lando. Rashi there, Emer b'schuto. De Erusin oses suffik nisuin. Erusin, it's a question whether it'll actually end up in nisuin. Shema tavo li de nisuin. Shema lo tavo. There's a suffik whether Erusin will end up at nisuin or not. So we agree that nisuin is real marriage. That's the finalization of the marriage, and that's when his ownership will really be solidified. So now, at the point of erusin, right, this is a first step towards nisuin. Does it take on how strong a step towards nisuin is it? Because is it guaranteed to end up in nisuin? Not necessarily. So therefore, it's a suffix whether, at this point, the erusin is strong enough to generate his rights over the woman or not. Right?
So the same suffix that we dealt with by Truman.
Let's see, by Truma it says Kinyan Kaspo, so the Gemara says Mina Torah.
When he
consummates the marriage, right.
Right. That was the one opinion that he doesn't, that she can't eat Truma at that point in case it never ends up
being Nisuin, right. The Simphon, it might be that he'll say it's a Kedushe Tos and undermine the Kedushe. Right, so this is a very interesting rash. I saw the Raivad explains it a little differently, which I think is somewhat easier to understand, because here you're just, it's a suffix. The question of Erusin, according to Rashi, is it's just, it's a question of Nisuin, which to me, the reason that the difficulty with Rashi is that when she does have Nisuin in the end, then what? It clarifies that Erusin was a Nisuin. But I guess you could argue that still at the point of Erusin, there's still a suffix. But I would say, why isn't it retroactively then become clear that this Erusin was a solid Erusin? Yeah, his close. Right. So as I'm not sure that I totally understand Rashi's pshat. The Raivad learns that it's a the suffix in terms of not whether the Erusin is a suffix, but just a question at what type of ownership does Erusin generate? Meaning that's the more of a suffix. Which to me is what seems to the Gemara. The Gemara is not sure, is unsure as to what Erusin, the relationship now of the wife and husband, how strong a relationship is that at this point? Does what type of ownership, what type of rights does the husband have at the point of Erusin? And that'll be the suffix. The suffix about is what is zechuto at the point of Erusin, how deep of a zechus does the husband have in his wife? Versus the suffix being whether, you know, Nisuin is, Erusin is going to end up as Nisuin or not. But again, either way you cut it, the point is that before Erusin, right? What's the case? Before Irusin, it's clearly her possession. She can do what she wants with the property. After Irusin, we run into a suffix. If we have a suffix, what do we generally do? What's the principle by a suffix? Right? Then we have a mutzim chaver al avaraya, and then whoever has the property is mukzuk in the property. So therefore, what does Basilo says? Don't transact. All right? Because we're not. It might be his for shus. But if she has transacted already, then what? Then we don't undermine. We don't take it back. We don't annul the transaction because it could be in her possession, and therefore the husband's going to be obligated to show that it's really not in her possession in order to get it back. So that's why we have the Basilo says lechatchila don't transact. But if you do transact, the transaction holds because we don't. We're again. You have to be mosi chaver l'varaya, or who's muksuk in the property has the rights now. And therefore, we can't undo the transaction because we don't have a leg to stand on, but we try to prevent her from having transactions at that point. So that's how the Gemara explains the first two cases in our Mishnah.
And Beit Shammai is not the super.
Right. Beit Shammai somehow doesn't believe that it's an issue here. Right. For either one of two reasons. Either they believe Erusin is already, you know, leading into Nisuan, it's strong enough, or that Erusin is clearly like the Eschuto. It's his chut already. That's the... All right. Next
question. Beit Shammai says Timkor.
Huh?
Why would Beit Shammai say Timkor if he holds that his rights? Beit Shammai holds that his rights are already like absolute. Even though he says that if she
Oh, I'm sorry, the other way around. You're right. Beit Shammai's the other way around, right? Because they say Timkor, she could transact. I'm sorry. Beit Shammai says she can transact. Well, it's still Shuta, according to Beit Shammai, the other way around. Thank you. That Shuta means that Erusin does not make Nisuan at all, or again, that Erusin is always still in Shuta, doesn't switch over until Nisuan. Right now, Amar Rabbi Gamliel. So Yibailu, I'm going to go with the simplest. There's three ways to learn this Gemara. I'm going to go with the one that Rashi takes in the end. Tosfos brings down that Rashi in an Ktiv Yad had two different ways to learn this Gemara. Plus, Tosfos brings down that the Rabbeinu Tam, who also has a third way to learn this Gemara. What's unclear is the Gemara says lechatchilo diyeved. Gemara doesn't literally say Reisha or Seifa. It just says, did he mean lechatchilo diyeved? And we don't know which lechatchilo, what diyeved he's talking about. All right, so I'm going to learn it the simplest way, but so that you're aware that there are other ways to learn the Gemara. Yibailu, Rabbi Huda brought down Rabbi Gamliel in our Mishnah. What was that? After the first two cases of the Mishnah, Rabbi Huda says, Amru Chachamim lefnei Gamliel. They said to Rabbi Gamliel, if he owns the wife, then he certainly should own the property. So what was that case? Al-Khathila O-Diyevet. Which case in the Mishnah was that referring to? Because why? We had, can she sell or not sell L'Khathila? And B'Diyevet, if she does sell, do we annul the transaction? Right, so now the question of Rabbi Yehuda was what? When Rabbi Yehuda came and said to Rabbi Gamliel, look, he owns the wife, he should own the property. Was he saying to her, look, you know, the halacha should be, what, that you should not be able to transact, she shouldn't be able to transact on the property? Or is he saying what? That even if she transacts, we should annul the transaction. Right, so how far was Rabbi Yehuda going? Because you have Beit Shammai, we know it says what? She can transact, fine, no problem. If Beit Hillel says don't transact, but if he does transact, it's annulled, right? The other way around. If she doesn't track it, it holds. Now, this last opinion, Rabbi Huda, who says the Chachamim are challenging Rabbi Gamliel to say, listen, if he owns the woman, she should own the property. What does that mean? Does that mean that they're saying, what, like Beis Hillel, that she shouldn't, l'chatchila, transact on the property? But B'di'evet, if she does transact, what, then it stays. Or are they saying, going one step further than Beis Hillel, that even if she does transact, we should annul the transaction? So what it means, l'chatchila b'di'evet. L'chatchila means, are they like Beis Hillel, that what says, don't transact, but if you do transact, it'll stay? Or are they saying b'di'evet, even if she does transact, we should annul the transaction? He had a rusin, he purchased his wife, he should get all her property as well. Like Mar says, Tashma, Detanya. Amar Rabbi Huda lifnei Rabbi Gamliel. Hol v'zu ishto. This is his wife, and this is his wife. Zu mechra batel, av zu mechra batel. What does it mean, this is his wife, this is his wife? What are those two points in time? Erusin and Nisuin. Just like Nisuin makes it his wife, so too Erusin makes it his wife. Just like by Nisuin, everybody agrees that if she transacts after Nisuin, that what? It's Batel. Then so everybody's. Why doesn't everybody agree that after Erusin, it should be Batel? So what do you see it's talking about, right? Talking about even B'di'evet. They want to annul the entire transaction. Just like they wanted to annul it after Nisuin, they want to annul it even after Erusin. So that Gemara says, Amalan, so Rabbi Gamliel responded to them, Allah Kadoshim Anu Boshim. We already are embarrassed about the ones after Nisuin. It's not so clear to us that if she transacts after Nisuin, that we should undo it or annul the transaction. And you want to, you know, now talk about property that came in before, like by Nisuin time? That's what you want to talk about. So you see that they were asking even b'di'evit. So there you have three stages in the Mishnah, right? The first part of the Mishnah. First part of the Mishnah says, if she had property prior to Erusin, then she's free to transact in it. If she gets property after Erusin, you'll have a three-way machlokas. You'll have Beis Shammai who says she can transact in it. Beis Hillel says she should not transact in it, but if she does, it works. And then you have Rebbe Yehuda coming along and suggesting what? That she shouldn't be able to transact, and if she transacts, we should annul the transaction. Right? So then Rebbe Gamliel comes in response to Rebbe Yehuda and says, you know what, I don't know, you know, you're trying to make a parallel between Nisuin and Erusin. You know, we're already having a difficult enough time saying that it works by Nisuin, and you want to apply it to Erusin. Right? He says it's not a fair comparison. All right. So, and why doesn't it work by Nisuin? We're going to see, the Gemara is going to talk about what the difficulty there is. All right, Tanya. Amri Rabbi Chanina ben Akavya. Lo kach eshivan Rabbi Gamliel. So Rabbi Chanina ben Akavya, right, in our Mishnah, was the second time in our Mishnah that they brought down Rabbi Gamliel's opinion. Right, in the Mishnah, brought down Rabbi Gamliel's opinion twice. First time Rabbi Yehuda brought it down, that he said, the Chum said, and then Rabbi Gamliel responded to him. The second time Rabbi Chanina talked about it. So Yehuda was talking about it by Yerusin. Bechinim Makavi was talking about it by Nisuin. He brought down the same language. Now the Gemara is going to bring down a brisa that clarifies why, you know, what he said according to Bechinim Makavi. Lo kach eshivam, not like you said, Rabbi Yehuda, but Ella, the whole conversation went like this. Ella kach eshivam. Lo yim amartem Nisua shekein bala zakai b'mitziyata masayadel faret nederel. Why did he answer? Meaning that Rabbi Yehuda asked about Erusin. He compared Erusin to Nisuin. And the Gemara says, Rabbi Gamliel rejected that and said, what? We're embarrassed about the stuff after Nisuin. Why are you applying it to Erusin? He had a better answer. That's what Rabbi Chanina ben Akavya says there was a different answer. What was the answer? Nisuin is totally different than Erusin. The type of ownership or the type of relationship generated by Nisuin is so much stronger than that of Erusin. Why? By Nisuin, a husband gets her mitziah. He gets her maisa production, a maisa yadah. He gets her afaris nedarah. I mean, alone. He could be made for her nedarah alone. Tomru be'arusa, shein balazakai, lo b'mitziyasa, v'lo maseyedeh, v'lo b'feres nerderel. Be'arusin, the type of relationship or ownership the husband has is so much more reduced. It's on a much lower level. Right? So if that's the case, how could you, according to Chachamim, who asked Rabbi Gamliel, oh, if it works by Nisua, why doesn't it work by Erusa? He answered up, it's because Erusin and Nisuin are totally different, right, status. It's a different status of the woman with the husband. The relationship is totally different. So Amalo Rebbe Machrat Shalom Nitzes, that works if she sold it. Your whole thesis works if she sold it prior to Nisuin. Nitzes Vachar Kach Machra, but if she already had Nisuin and sells it afterwards, Mahu. Right? So again, there are three stages of what could happen here. If she had property. She had property that fell to her, you know, when she was in Arusa, and she transacted in it when she was in Arusa. Right? Then there can be property that fell to her as an Arusa, and then she transacted in it after she was in Nisua. And then there's the last possible is if she got property when she was in Nisua and transacted in Nisua. So that last one, which is the one that we know, there are two sides that we know are clearly, everybody agrees to. One is if she gets property when she's in Nisua and transacts in it when Nisua, it's batel. Right, that we know, that's the one extreme. The other extreme is if she gets it before she's in Arusa and transacts it in it, which is Arusa, everybody agrees that that works, right? That's fine. So the questions are, when property falls to her, when she is what? An Arusa, and transacts in it when she's in Arusa, or she gets property and transacts it after Nisua, right? So that's what the Gemara is saying here. So the way this price is working, according to Chanina ben Akavya, is what? The first part of the Mishnah, the Chachamim came and challenged Rabbi Gamliel and said, well, if she got property when she was in Arusa and transacted in it when she was in Arusa, then why is it any worse than when she's in Nisua? Arusa and Nisua should work the same way. It's ownership. The husband's got some sort of possession in his wife. She possessed the property. So Rabbi Gamliel answered up. What are you talking about? Arusa is definitely not the same status.
It is worse than Nisua.
Right. It is worse than Nisua. Exactly. It's not the same relationship. He doesn't have the same ownership in his wife. So they said, okay, your answer works fine for what if she transacted when she was still in Arusa. What happens now if the property fell to her in Arusa and she transacts when she's already in Nisua? Then your differential falls. Because now he does own, he has a full Nisuin ownership, so why over there does it not work? Why shouldn't it work there? So that's what Gemara says. The Chachamim are asking him, so that's it. Amar lo Rebbe Mochra ad shelo Nisseis. Your whole explanation works if she sold it or transacted it prior to Nisuin. Nisei svachokach mochra. But if she transacted it after nisuin mahu, then why shouldn't it work according to you? Because you're saying, all right, nisuin and erusin are different. But now we have nisuin. She's already a nisua. Why should she be able to transact? Amalu abzu mocheru no tenet v'kayam. This woman can transact and it works. Amalu hol v'zocha bisha lo yiske b'nechasim. Right? If he already owns the woman, meaning that he's zocha and nisuin has such a strong relationship with the wife, right? Then why shouldn't he be able to take the possessions? So this is where he made the statement. We're already having difficulty saying when she gets property when she is a nisua, right? And transaction when she's a nisua, that we undermine that transaction. We know that transaction. That's already hard enough for us to work with her to comprehend. Then, right, take one step back. Well, she got the property before nisuin, right? During erusin, she got the property and then transacted after nisuin. I can't get that. So Gemara says, va'anan t'nan. This is according to Rashi's Girsa. I'll just point this out again. This is Rashi's Girsa in the Gemara, that the Gemara is challenging from our Mishnah, and the Gemara is going to amend our Mishnah to read like the Brisa. Right? Tosafot says problems with that is why would you ever amend the Mishnah to read like a Brisa? In general, we amend the Brisa to read like the Mishnah. All right, so then Tosafot comes up with a different explanation, but way our Gemaras read, that's in generally what happens, that when Rashi decided what a Girsa was, our Gemaras, like we look in Rashi and says, this is the Girsa, and that's what's in the Gemara. That's because Rashi influenced very heavily what became the Girsos in the Gemara. So the Girsa we're reading is now according to what Rashi thinks the Girsa should be. Right? All right. In our Mishnah, even in our Mishnah, when it says Rabbi Gamliel, when it said that she got property before Nisuin, and then she was in Nisua, Achlo Niseis, it says what? Achlo Niseis v'Niseis, so she got property when she was in Arusa, and then what? She got married. Rabbi Gamliel married in Machom Notno Kayam. Machom Notno is a Lushan of Bidiyevet. Right, over here in the Brisa, Rabbi Gamliel says, Mocheret v'notenet, in the present tense. She's allowed to transact, b'chatchila. According to Rabbi Gamliel, she can transact the property that fell to her prior to Nisuin, and now she is a Nisua. It says, Mocheret v'notenet. It's not like, if she did it, it's okay. No, she can do it. But from our Mishnah, it says, Imochra v'notna kayam. If she did transact, then the transaction stands, it's a Lashon b'diyevet. So Amar Rav Zvid, Tani, amend the Mishnah to read, Mocheret v'notenet v'kayam. They amend the Mishnah to read like the Braisa that Mocheret v'notenet, meaning that she's actively lichatchila allowed to transact in this property. All right, so that's how, again, I'm pointing out, this is Rashi's pshat, this is the way Rashi's girsa. Difficulty is that we're amending the Mishnah to read like the Braisa, which in generally the Gemara will always say, Mafkia Braisa midei Mishnah, right? That you change the Maisa, not the Mishnah. Why are we taking the Braisa as being the paradigm, and then switching the Mishnah for it. Tosfos goes the other way and switches it based on the Gemara further on about the questions that are asked later on in the Gemara. Papa Mar Lokasha. It's not a problem. Ha Rabbi Yehuda Liba de Rabbi Gamliel. Ha Rabbi Chanina Ben Akavya Liba de Rabbi Gamliel. All right. So now, what do you have in our Mishnah? Rabbi Gamliel was quoted twice. All right. First time he's quoted by Rabbi Yehuda, and the second time he was quoted by Rabbi Chanina Ben Akavya. Right, so now the question is why did they bring Rabbi Gamliel twice? So the way the Gemara is learning now is that what Rabbi Yehuda says that Bidi Eved, meaning that's what he was referring to, a Bidi Eved case, that if Bidi Eved she transacts, the transaction should not be annulled. That's what we just said above in our Gemara, right? That when Rabbi Yehuda came along, he wanted to suggest what? That the transaction should be annulled. Right, even b'di'evit, it should be annulled. And then Rabbi Gamliel was responding to that. So Rabbi Gamliel was only addressing, according to Rabbi Yehuda, Rabbi Gamliel was addressing the case of b'di'evit, that they wanted to suggest what, that if she transacts even as an arusa, that it should not be kayam, right? That we should annul that transaction. And Rabbi Gamliel was responding to that. So according to that, Rabbi Gamliel was only responding to a case of b'di'evit, meaning that b'di'evit, if she transacted already, we say the transaction sticks. But not that she can go and transact. Whereas Rabbi Chanina, or at least we see in the Braisa, and that's where Rashi amended the Mishnah to read also, Rabbi Chanina ben Akavya is saying what? Rabbi Chanina ben Akavya is saying that what? She can transact lechatchila. So that's even lechatchila, mocheret benotenet kayam. So that's Rabbi Chanina ben Akavya. So that's what the Gemara is saying. You don't have to amend the Mishnah. The Mishnah that says in mach v'not kayam, that what, if she did it after Nisuin, she transacted, that's only b'diyeva that it works. That was Rabbi Yehuda's opinion. Rabbi Yehuda was bringing down Rabbi Gamliel. That is his opinion. What? That only we say b'di'evet if she transacts, everything sticks. Chatchila, she shouldn't transact. Rabbi Chanina ben Akavi, as we see from the price, disagrees and says even the chatzila she can transact. She not only if she did it, it works, but even she can chatzila can transact, and that will explain the difference between the brisa and the mishnah. The mishnah is authored by Rabbi Yehuda according to Rabbi Gamliel. The brisa is Rabbi Chanina ben Akavi according to Rabbi Gamliel. And what will be the difference between them? The difference between them is whether a woman who got property prior to nisuin during when being in a rusa got married. After Nisuin, can she transact with Chatchila? I mean, Mocher v'no tenet b'kayam, she can transact with Chatchila. That's Rabbi Chanina ben Akavi's opinion. That's the Braisa. Or is it in Mocher v'not no kayam? She shouldn't transact, but if she does transact, we do not annul the transaction. That'll be Rabbi Yehuda, and he'll be the author of our Mishnah, and the Lashon in our Mishnah. That's the way Rabbi Papa explains it. So now the Gemara is going to say, well, if that's the case, right, then what? Then if Rabbi Chanina ben Akavi does not agree to... what Rabbi Yehuda says, then what do you have? Then you have Rabbi Chanina ben Akavi ke Beit Shammai. Rabbi Chanina ben Akavi is going to be like Beit Shammai. What did Beit Shammai say? Beit Shammai said that when she's an Arusa and she got property as an Arusa, she can lechatchila transact. Right? If she lechatchila can transact, then what? Then it's like Beit Shammai, because that's what Beit Shammai said in the first side of the Mishnah, that she can transact lechatchila. So that's not what we want, obviously, because halacha is like Beis Hillel, and therefore what? We want to try to set up the Tanoim to follow Beis Hillel, not Beis Shammai. Now again, this is one of Tosfos' problems with Rashi, is that this should be a problem for the way Rashi is learning also. The way Rashi explained the Gemara before, we are mending the Mishnah to be lechatchila, that means that the whole Mishnah is going like Beis Shammai now. Because if according to Rashi, we're amending the Mishnah to read like the Braisa, that means according to them, not only according to Rav Papa's way of explaining the Mishnah.
Or just the Rabbi Yehuda's question is on the opinion of Beit Shammai.
What, that it's on... No, because he wants to, according to this, Rabbi Yehuda wants to annul it even b'di'evet.
According to Beit Shammai.
Oh, even according to Beit Hillel, because Beit Hillel says it works b'di'evet, right? So even according to Beit Hillel, it's a question. Beit Hillel agrees that if she transacts, it sticks, right? Basil says you can't transact with chatchila, but if you do transact, it sticks. Both of them agree that it sticks. Yeah, so when you ask a question, it shouldn't stick at all. No, but if you say it's not going to stick at all, then what? That's Rabbi Yehuda. Rabbi Chanina ben Akavi, right? It's going to be that they can even transact with chatchila. That'll be obviously he's not holding like Basil. He has to be holding like Beit Shammai, who says you can transact with chatchila. So that's a problem. So that's a problem with Rav Papa's position. Problem is the way Rashi explains the Gemara now. It should have been a question on Rav Zvid's explanation as well. Because Rav Zvid amended our Mishnah to read like the Braisa, that what? That Rabbi Gamliel meant lechatchila. That you can transact lechatchila even after suing, before nisuin, any time. That's the case. The Gemara could have asked the same question that first. The fact that the Gemara didn't ask that question makes it sound like that wasn't what the Gemara was doing at that point in time. That's the second challenge Tosfos has in Rashi. I just want to point out the difficulties, not that we have to go. I just want you to understand where the failings are. All right, Hachin Kamar says, Lo nechlekul beisham beisil al davar zeh. So that's what he means, that he... When Rav Papa says Rabbi Chanina Makavia's position, he's also going to have to hold that Rabbi Silom Beis Halai never argued in this. The part of his opinion is what? You can transact with Chatchila, and this is an area where Beis Silom Beis Halai did not disagree. They never had a machlokas about this. So that's how he solves the problem. He gets out of the problem of being like Beis Halai by saying there was never a machlokas between Beis Halai and Beis Halai in this case. In this case, Beis Silom Beis Halai agreed. Everybody agreed that it is a good transaction. And then he'll get out of, that's how he gets out of this issue. Okay, Rav Shmuel. So now we have Rav and Shmuel's opinion. Rav and Shmuel being later, right, early Amoraim. So they come up, they have opinions. Amri Tavayu. Ben Shnafalo Nechasim Achlo Nitarsa. Whether she got the property, what? Before she got engaged. Ben Shnafalo Nechasim Mishin Arsa Venisait. And then she gets married. A Baal Motzimiyata Lukuchos. The husband can remove them. Come on! Now who's this like? Right? This isn't like, this isn't like anybody we've heard so far, right? Here, her transactions are not kayam. And when did she get the property? Depends whether she got the property before being an arusa, whether she got the property when she's an arusa, venises, and then gets married, then a baal motzi miyad lukuchos, and the baal can take him out. Now this sounds very strange, because we have in our Mishnah, modin beis hillel beis shammai, that what? That when it fell to her prior to arusin, then she's full ownership. She could transact in this property. They're like on the opposite extreme here. We said that's the one obvious case where nobody worried about is what? Before Erusin, she got property. That's clearly her property. She could do whatever she wants with it. So here all of a sudden you have Rav and Shmuel coming and saying property before Erusin, property during Erusin, all of this, she can't transact. And even if she got property during Erusin, right, then we said what? Mishin Nises, they're even Rav and Shmuel. Who are they like? Come on. Delok Rav Yehuda. Alok Rabbi Hanina ben Akavya. They're like neither of these two opinions. Neither like Rabbi Yehuda, neither like Rabbi Hanina ben Akavya. Because even Rabbi Yehuda agrees that what? B'di'evet, it's Kaya. Here they're saying that it doesn't work. Here they're saying it works, doesn't work at all. So, Inu the Amik Rabbutenu, they held like Rabbutenu. Who are the Rabbutenu? The Tanya, Rabbutenu, Chazru b'nimnu. They went in the Paschal Nalocha, Bench Nafalu Achilot Titaris. Whether it fell to her prior to Yerushim, Bench Nafalu Mishnar Tavanises, or it fell to her after Yerushim, and she got married, Abal Motsim Yad Lukuchos. The Baal is allowed to take it back from the Kuchos, he's allowed to remove it from the Kuchos.
That's still never going
what? Well, yeah, I mean, but this is even property that fell to her prior to Yerushim at this point, right?
But
this
everything is else is proper prior to Yerushim came to her.
No, I mean, here we have cases where it fell to her.
Regular
case of Nisim Lub, it's her father's possessions that he's giving in to, their, right?
He gives
so it's a dowry, they're putting into the ksuba. Here, it's, she owns private ownership of property, right? She's got in her own ownership. Right, somehow she's got in possession of property, which is unusual, right? But this woman had possession of actual property coming into the marriage. Right? So then, what is that property? Is that property now automatically get, you know, subsumed into the ksuba? And so now, when you reach Nisuin, that's easier to understand, because then the ksuba's in fact she's married, then maybe he has real rights in the property. But until she's Nisua, you know, she owns property here. What is that? What are her rights in this property? Or what are the husband's rights in this property? So Rav and Shmuel are saying that what? Once you hit Erusin, it's everything's like, almost like what you're saying, but you hit Erusin, that's it. That's the cutoff point. Erusin makes the husband and owner and everything, and therefore he can annul any transaction after Erusin.
So any transaction she makes before she gets married, the Kuchos have to know that it's possibly.
Unless she does it prior to Erusin, right?
So the Basenu is the.
Yeah, well, she's prior to Erusin.
What?
The Basenu is the Hill Hasheni, something like that?
Oh, I don't. Yeah, the Gemara. He refers to. There's a Gemara in.
Perek Rishon.
Yeah, yeah, there's a Gemara that. Rashi refers to. There's another place thinking about it, Zohar, or somewhere in Gittin, that the Gemara does the same thing, says Rabbatenu. I don't remember what he said. What does he say here, Rabbatenu? I don't know. I saw somebody who says it's where's Rabbatenu. First, there's another Gemara that has a similar that the Gemara uses it in another place. Rabbatenu. Shit. I don't remember what it was. That was Gleina Shasri Bekiva Eger is the one who says it.
That's it was when.
In Nida, the Gemara uses Rabbatenu.
In the beginning, in Perek Rishon, it was about whether the date on the get the date on the get is,
makes it a star, right? Yeah, what do you call it? The star that does that determine? Does it make it a star?
Lamafreya,
right? Does it make it? I don't know if that's the same Rabbutenu. All right. So now the Gemara says here. Mishanisa is elu belu modim. So now the Gemara is going to discuss that Tkanas Usha, and this Tkanas Usha seems to be already mentioned our Mishnah. All right, so this is it. So Gemara says, Lema Tanina the Takanas Usha. We have this Takanas Usha that's already mentioned in our Mishnah. The Amr of Yosef Rechanina, but Usha Yitkinu. What are they attacking in Usha? We saw this earlier in the Gemara. Usha and Usha, they establish a lot of Takanos that dealt with Ksuba. Right? That the daughters can get Mizonos, right? All these Takanos that we saw earlier in the earlier program. Yitkinu Usha Isha Shemachra Benisksei Meluk B'chayi Bala. The Takana, if she transacts in Nichsei Malug during her husband's lifetime, Umeita, and then she dies, she predeceases her husband, Habal Motzi Miyad L'Kuchos. The husband can take it out from the Kuchos. That sounds exactly like our Mishnah, right? Our Mishnah says what? That when Mishin Nises, he can go in and annul the transaction. So that's now to answer Michael your question here. Now, when does the transaction get annulled? When does it actually get annulled? So that's when it says, Masnisin, right, what? Bechayeha ulepeirot. The Mishnah is saying, what? During her lifetime, he can go and annul the transaction, meaning that he can go take the property back and have the property produce, because he's entitled to the peiros. You can only sell, in the end, you can only sell what you own. What does she own? She owns the principal, the property itself. She does not own the peiros, because once she's married, it's nechsei malug, and then what? The payros belong to the husband, so she is unable to sell that portion of it. So he's able to, according to the Mishnah, go and annul the transaction, meaning that what? He can go take the property back and produce it. But that suggests that when she dies, predeceases him, normally the property would go to him, that she's able to sell, because she owns that. She owned the principal property, she could sell that out, and that'll in the end. So basically what it'll be is it's a forward transaction. She is selling the property for the point in which she predeceases her husband. And then the lekuchos will get it at that point. So the husband, according to our mission, can keep it for the period of time she's alive, right? And that will be, because he's entitled to the payrolls. And as soon as she dies, that property will revert back to the lekuchos, right, to the buyers. So now, to kind of usha, what?
Why is it going back to the lekuchos?
Because she owns the right to sell the actual property.
Principal. She owns the principal property, so she could.
Right.
So she sold it.
Control of
the payrolls. So the husband can go back while she's alive and keep get the land back to get his payrolls. To get production off the field, he has to get the field to make it productive. So he can go back, get the field to get the production, but she already sold the principal. So when is his rights to the fruit, the payrolls end? That's when she dies.
So
when
she dies.
Right. Oh, so that's the next line in the Gemara. That's what the Mishnah did. Takanas Usha is the Gufa Shel Karka La'achar Miso. Right, exactly. In Usha, that was the next part of the Takana. The Takana of Usha is that even after she dies, when she produces it, that the husband can keep the Gufa Karka. He can keep the principle of the land. That's exactly it. So then you were asking, when we say annul the transaction, what does it mean annul the transaction? So that depends when. If you're talking about our mission means annul the transaction for the period of time that he's entitled to the payrolls. Meaning that he's entitled to get the payrolls, but then when she dies, whenever that the property will revert to the buyers. Now the Takanas Usha says what? That even at the point when she dies, and he keeps the property. The principal stays and she has no rights to sell. The property remains with the husband even after her death. Right? So that's the Gufa Shel Karka La'achar Misa. That was the addition. So that's the addition of the Takanas Usha. Alright. Shimon Cholek Ben Nechasim. So Rabbi Shimon differentiates between what type of property. So, Elaine, are you doing? Elaine, Jane, you doing? But what is property known to the husband? Property not known to the husband. So, Amar Rabbi Yosef, Rabbi Chanina, you doing mikarkai? And we're talking about those that are known to the husband. That's talking about what? Karka, right? That's talking about land. Real property is always known. It has a kol. It's always obvious. Right, Jane, you doing metalklin? That's not known to the husband. That's metalklin. That's stuff that moves around. She can hide it. Stuff like that.
Unless she's set up a shell company to hide ownership.
Right. Rabbi Yochanan Amar, Elav Elav. You doing, Hen? Rabbi Yochanan says, everybody, those are both known property. Bela and Jane, you doing? Koshi Evet Kam, Nafalo Nechosim, Medina Sayam. What is property that is not known to the husband? She has some relative, you know, out in the far fetches, you know, somewhere way off in the. Right, in America. That's it. So she's got these relatives that just dropped her property somewhere else, so he's not going to know about it, because he doesn't know this woman as a relative, some, you know, far-flung place that is giving her property. So Tanya Nam Yochiv, a brace that supports this position. Hey, Luane, Chain, on you doing? Koshi Shevet, Kamen, Afulah, Nechosim. Right, Medina Sayam, she lives here, because why? And her relatives live somewhere far off. If she has relatives that are local, it's an interesting line, the Gemara. If she has... local property, the husband's anticipating this. That's why she's doing it, according to Rabbi Yochanan. She has relatives locally. When he marries her, part of the reason he's marrying her is because he knows that when these relatives die, she's going to get that property. So he's kind of, in his cheshbon of marrying this girl, he's
taking into account her prospects.
Exactly, her prospects are taken into account. But if it's somewhere far off, right, far off in a far-flung place, then he can't be considering that because he doesn't know about it, right? So that's what Enu you're doing and you're doing, right? So that's it. You're doing means something that he would have had his mind, he would have had some consideration for. So then when she transacts and it doesn't work because according to Shimon, he was part of his agreement, part of his marriage, focused on this property, right? But if the property is in a far-flung place, then he had no mindset that this is a part of his property. Therefore, she transacts in it. The transaction is kayam. I'm going to stop here.